Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Dixon, Bored. Selection was about academic improvement. By Stuart Doreen. If you believe Midland ISD Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon, the district has hit the jackpot with the potential hire Angelica Ramsey as its permanent chief executive. Dixon said Ramsey breaks the mold of the last leaders of the district in that she is a true instructional leader, the product of a search geared specifically to find such a leader. Dixon said the board wasn't interested in leaders from anywhere but A and B rated districts, and their conversations were laser focused on academic performance. There was never any other discussion, Dixon said. What's best for academics led Midland ISD's publicly elected officials to bring three candidates back for a second round of interviews last week, and then decide on Ramsey, whose resume includes her current position at Pleasant Valley School District, which ranks around 350th of 5,000 school districts in the state, a far cry from Midland ISD's position among the larger school districts in Texas. She is academics over everything, Dixon said. That is all our business is, to teach kids. She exudes that. She will worry about buildings and buses after she teaches the kids. Sense of urgency. Board President Rick Davis said finding the right person to lead the district forward happened after more than 5 hours of hearing the right mix of data-driven decision-maker that puts students first and is willing to have candid conversations that move the district toward improving academic outcomes. She wasn't the only candidate to show an ability to move the district forward, Davis said, but there were two things he recalled that elevated her standing. The first was there was not one time during her 5.5 hours that he was not excited to hear her thoughts on the matter. Each and every answer she gave was, I thought, a perfect fit for Midland and for MISD, Davis said, and for what we needed to improve the performances here. The system was created prior to the previous superintendent's arrival in 2017, and by board members' own admissions, they haven't seen the gains they hoped to see thus far. Matter of fact, the lack of improvement by the previous superintendent led to a parting of ways last fall. In looking for our next superintendent, we were looking for someone who we thought had a very strong academic and curriculum background, Davis said, and had a proven track record of improving the districts where they had previously been. Up to the challenge. One snapshot of the two districts comes from greatschools.org. The education site shows that of the 13 schools Ramsey oversees at the Pleasant Valley School District in Camarillo, California, 50% were above average, 42% were average, and 8 were below average. The same website shows Midland ISD with 8% of its schools above average and 63% below average. As I left the final interview Wednesday night, I kept going through the candidates, board member Brian Murray said in a statement. Who will be able to positively impact academics? Who will place a priority on our MISD students? Who will best promote a culture of change and place a high value on people? Who will be the best for the community of Midland? I literally kept coming back to the same candidate. I kept remembering in her second interview that her answers compelled me to want to know more. She is engaging, she is calming, she is passionate about the work. She is highly intelligent, she is bilingual, she has a history of improving outcomes. She had studied our scores and did not blink at the opportunity to accept the challenge. Schooldigger.com ranked Pleasant Valley 321st of 1,525 districts. Only one campus finished with less than 3 stars on a 5-star scale. Midland ISD ranked 691st of 897 districts in Texas and had more than 20 campuses ranked with less than 3 stars. I believe she's got the energy, knowledge, and resources of being an academic leader to put MISD where we need to be academically, said Tommy Bishop, the new dean of this new school board, in an emailed statement. She is a strong advocate for students and teachers to be successful in classroom, as well as students to be college, career, and military ready. I believe she will be a morale builder for MISD. Both Bishop and Murray noted the culture change they believe is possible inside the district under Ramsey and her past experience, including at the El Paso Area District Socorro ISD, that shows central office will be more of a support vehicle for campuses. Davis said that the new loan finalist told the board she typically spent 2 days a week on campus to see the work being done inside the classrooms. She is the real deal when it comes to the basics, said Dixon about the board's hire. It is expected that should the board approve Ramsey's contract after the 21-day waiting period, the former coach could start between the middle of February and the beginning of March. At that point, MISD will have its new leader and first female superintendent in the district's history. What happens after that will take buy-in from teachers, staff, students, parents, community, whose expectations in education have been eroding for so long, Dixon said. We have to do something different, Dixon said. Doing the same thing, you will get the same result. Complete reaction from Tommy Bishop. Dr. Ramsey, in my opinion, rose to the top during our interview process to lead our district to success in academics. She was a high school principal in Socorro ISD, El Paso, Texas, where they were successful academically. She was recruited by the previous superintendent in Socorro, asking her to join him in California to be the chief academic officer over 30-plus districts with 276,000 students. And she is a strong advocate for students and teachers to be successful in the classroom, as well as students to be college, career, and military ready. I believe she will be a morale builder for MISD. She has experience in the large schools as well as at the district that she is in now with 6,500 students. The school that she is at now, I believe, is in the top 30% academically in California. During her interview, she stated that she likes to include teachers and principals on decisions that affect them in classroom and their campuses. I believe she's got the energy, knowledge, and resources of being an academic leader to put MISD where we need to be academically. Complete reaction from Brian Murray. First, I would like to start by saying that we had 3 very good finalists for the superintendent position. I feel very confident in this process, as the board had to make a very hard decision to select a lone finalist. At the end of the discussion, we selected the candidate who we feel is the best fit for MISD and Midland today and for the future. I am happy that Dr. Angelica Ramsey has been chosen as the lone finalist. I paid close attention to the feedback that was received from the focus groups for what Midlanders wanted in the next superintendent. Dr. Ramsey checks so many of those boxes. First, she will bring a new positive outlook for our district that will be based on relationships and a culture change. She is a former teacher, coach, and principal, and has expressed the desire to improve our current academic status from the classroom up. She believes in a central office that is a support mechanism for campuses and will be present on campuses to serve those needs. She has West Texas ties and understands our values. I might add her husband is also an impressive academic leader who also has a high school football coaching background. may be the most important characteristic that was mentioned several times was an academic background. She has been a chief academic officer who has served hundreds of thousands of students. She expressed her desire to get pre-K through second grade a strong reading curriculum that will set a foundation to improve outcomes for all students as they progress through our system. She will rely on data and place a focus on working with secondary students that have struggled through the system. I could go on, as there are many other boxes that she checks that make her the right pick for Midland. As I left the final interview Wednesday night, I kept going through the candidates. Who will be able to positively impact academics? Who will place a priority on our MISD students? Who will best promote a culture of change and place a high value on people? Who will be the best for the community of Midland? I literally kept coming back to the same candidate. I kept remembering in her second interview that her answers compelled me to want to know more. She is engaging, she is calming, she is passionate about the work. She is highly intelligent, she is bilingual. She has a history of improving outcomes. She had studied our scores and did not blink at the opportunity to accept the challenge. She understands PLCs as a data dive and an enhancement for students and teachers, not a compliance mechanism. She was genuinely excited about making Midland, Texas her home. I am undoubtedly excited that the board agreed with my thoughts and made this selection for our lone finalists. I hope all of Midland can get to know her, support her, and give her a chance to do great things. I feel we have a great person to lead us back to excellence. Our students and community deserve nothing less. This article is entitled "Statistics Show Drop in COVID Metrics in Midland" by Stuart Doreen. COVID metrics are going in a positive direction in Midland County. The Midland Health Department of State Health Services websites show numbers from hospital occupancy inside the county and region, confirmed cases and positivity counts trending to low points for this year, and in some cases going back even further. For instance, Midland Health reported 259 positive tests for COVID-19 at its testing centers this past week, January 10th to the 16th. That is the lowest total going back to the week of October 31st, 214. The positivity rate was 21.8%, which was a drop of nearly 5 percentage points compared to the previous week, January 3rd to 9th, and the lowest percentage going back to the week of December 19th. When looking at hospital census, Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said this past week that Midland Memorial Hospital's active COVID census dropped below 60 for the first time in recent memory. On Monday morning, the number had dropped to 51, or around 52% of the 97 rooms assigned to COVID patients. The percentage of COVID patients occupying total inpatient rooms at Midland Memorial Hospital also fell to 21%. That number is below the 7-day average, 25%. It also appears to be the lowest percentage at Midland Memorial Hospital going back to at least December 2nd. The percentage of rooms occupied at Midland Memorial for all patients on Monday morning was 74%, which was down from the 7-day average of 80% and down from 90% earlier this month. Lastly, the Midland-Odessa region also reported a rate of 11.76% of all occupancy from COVID-19 patients. That percentage is below the 15% rate that could bring in restrictions from the state and, as of Saturday, was the third lowest in the state. In fact, 18 of the 22 had rates above 15%, according to the Department of State Health Services. This article is called "Small Bites." It is entitled "FC Coffee Shop Opens Downtown." Wine Bar Bookstore Announced for Micro Market by J.C. Lewis. A new coffee shop has opened downtown. FC Coffee is located inside One Wall Plaza on the first floor at 306 West Wall Street. The shop opened at the beginning of December and offers coffee drinks like lattes, espressos, and cappuccinos, along with Flower Child baked goods. Owners Joshua and Crystal Foley and Jared and Casey Ivanhoe opened FC Coffee in One Wall Plaza. The Foleys also own Flower Child baked goods and specialize in making biscotti as well as cookies and scones. "It all just kind of worked out," Crystal said. "We were looking at a different space to bake out of. We checked out the space and decided to expand into a coffee shop while baking out of it also." The Foleys started Flower Child baked goods in August 2019. Crystal said she has always loved baking and attended a course in Nottinghamshire, England. Joshua's background is in the oil and gas industry, but has enjoyed the change to a more laid-back career. "They have really made it their mission to reinvent biscotti." Crystal said they wanted to show people what biscotti could be like. "Usually the biscotti people try comes in a big tub and is really crunchy," she said. "The first biscotti we did was a chocolate biscotti. We loved it because it wasn't as hard as the store-bought biscotti." She said, "Since biscotti is still a twice-baked cookie, people will still want to dip the biscotti in coffee." The Foleys bake chocolate biscotti, vanilla biscotti, vegan coconut biscotti, butter pecan biscotti, and limoncello biscotti. "We are trying to reinvent biscotti because it kind of got a bad rap, and there is a big market for it," she said. "In most coffee shops, what you're going to see is what they can buy at Sam's Club." Through Flower Child Baked Goods, they ship biscotti and cookies all over the United States. At FC Coffee, Crystal said they will bake different items throughout the week, such as biscuits with sausage gravy, jalapeno kolaches, and cinnamon rolls. "We always make everything from scratch," Joshua said. "We think that's something that gives us a leg up because of our baking background. How many breakfast spots are making their bread for avocado toast from scratch? And even the syrups we make from scratch." FC Coffee has coffee by the gallon available for delivery if customers are located downtown. The shop is open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. "Most people come to see what smells good," Crystal said. "A lot of our business comes after smelling us baking yummy food." Just announced. The Micro Market announced on Thursday that a wine bar and bookstore will be coming soon. Low Street Books is in the construction phase currently. For updates, follow along on Instagram at lo.st.books.tx. This is the coronavirus page. This article is entitled "Health Officials to Begin Vaccination for Phases 1A, 1B," from Staff Reports. Midland health leaders stated Monday that they will begin administering COVID vaccinations January 25th at the Horseshoe Complex, by appointment only, according to a press release. According to the Midland Unified Command Team, which includes leaders from the hospital district, city, and county, leaders are anticipating receipt of a large weekly supply of COVID-19 vaccine and will administer doses to Phase 1A, healthcare workers, and 1B, over 65 and or diagnosed with a chronic disease individuals. Those individuals that are part of either phase and those that have not had COVID-19 in the past 90 days can register to get on the list for this distribution and future allocations of the COVID-19 vaccine by visiting midlandhealth.org/vaccine and clicking on the Click to Register button, according to the press release. Detailed information defining the populations included in these phases is available on the above-mentioned website. A phone line is being set up for those without internet access. Once on the waiting list, a person will not receive a phone call to be scheduled according to a press release. A person will be assigned an appointment time and date and receive an email or text message with the information needed. This communication will come from support@healthypass.com or 855-897-1447. If a person already put his or her name on the Midland Health Department list but does not qualify for the 1A or 1B distribution, that name will be removed and the person will need to reapply at a later date. Once a person has a confirmed date, time of vaccine, he or she will need to make sure they complete all forms online that are sent prior to arriving for the vaccine. Failure to complete the registration process prior to arrival may delay one's vaccination. Please take a valid picture ID with you to your appointment, arrive on time, and wear a short sleeve or sleeveless shirt, the press release stated. If a jacket is needed, make sure it is easy to remove. The Horseshoe facility is located at 2514 Arena Trail. Enter the Horseshoe parking lot from either Garfield or the I-20 service road. Follow signage and volunteers around the Horseshoe property to the north side and park near the backstage building. A map of the location is available at medlinhealth.org/vaccine. If unable to drive, Easy Rider will be providing bus routes to the Horseshoe vaccine location from the downtown transfer center at 15 minutes after each hour. Bus routes are available at ez-rider.org/routes/html. For further questions, visit midlandhealth.org/vaccine. This article is entitled, Texas Reports 10,000 New COVID-19 Cases, 46 More Deaths, from the Associated Press. Texas reported more than 10,000 new cases of COVID-19 Monday and 46 more deaths from the disease caused by the novel coronavirus. The number of Texans hospitalized with COVID-19 rose from Sunday to 13,858 Monday. Coronavirus hospitalizations remain near their record high, and intensive care units in several regions are at or near capacity, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. The department reported 10,110 more confirmed cases of the virus Monday, as well as 695 probable cases. Over the last week, more than 17% of coronavirus tests have come back positive in Texas, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Gas Prices in Midland Up Nearly 20 Cents in Last 2 Weeks, by Stuart Doreen. The increase in oil prices is having an impact on gasoline prices in Midland and across the state. AAA Texas reported last week that the average price of regular unleaded gas across the state increased 11 cents week over week, and that the price in both Midland and Odessa increased 6 cents. The most recent report from AAA Texas showed averages jumping in all 27 larger metropolitan areas that the organization surveys. It also showed increases of at least 10 cents in 14 of those communities, including a jump of 28 cents in El Paso, 16 cents in Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, and Victoria, and 11 cents in Corpus Christi, Houston, and Texarkana. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Over the past 2 weeks, the average price in Midland has increased by 19 cents. The average price in Odessa has climbed by 17 cents, according to AAA Texas. The average across the state has increased by 16 cents during the same period. Drivers in El Paso are paying the highest average, $2.36 a gallon. The report shows the averages in Midland and Odessa are $2.26 and $2.30, respectively. The Lone Star State gas price average broke a 301-day streak below $2 a gallon, AAA Texas reported. The report also stated that was the longest streak since 2005, when the state average hit $2 a gallon for the first time. Higher crude oil prices are primarily behind the rise in pump prices. Still, demand for retail gasoline remains below levels seen at this time last year, primarily due to COVID-19's impact on travel and daily commutes. Across the region, Amarillo's price moved 3 cents to $1.97, and Lubbock showed a 9 cent increase to $2.02. The price in San Angelo rose 6 cents to $2.02, and the price in Abilene rose 3 cents to $2.16. The low average in the state was $1.96 in Sherman-Denison. AAA Texas also reported that the average in Midland is 23 cents less than 1 year ago. The state average has dropped 17 cents during that same period.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 19, 2021. Livestock Show. Riley Rubio from Greenwood and others present their American steers on Friday at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena during the 2021 Midland County Livestock Association show. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa. Gasoline prices in Midland, Odessa have risen 5.1 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $2.27 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations in Midland, Odessa. This compares with the national average that has increased 4.2 cents per gallon versus last week to $2.38 a gallon, according to Gas Buddy. Including the change locally during the past week, prices yesterday were 15.7 cents per gallon lower than a year ago and are 22.1 cents per gallon higher than a month ago. The national average has increased 15.6 cents per gallon during the last month and stands 17.4 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gas prices on January 18 in Midland, Odessa over the last 5 years. 2020, $2.42 a gallon. 2019, $2.38 a gallon. 2018, $2.44 a gallon. 2017, $2.17 a gallon. 2016, $1.70 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. Meetings, Planning and Zoning, 3:30 p.m., Council Chamber, 300 North Lorraine Street. Note, check the education pages 8 through 9A for education meetings today. When it's open, Midland County Tax Assessor Collector, 2110 North A Street, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, 688-4810. Midland Central Appraisal District, 4631 Andrews Highway, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, 699-4991. Department of Public Safety, Driver's License Office, 2800 Wright Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday and Wednesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays, 686-1120. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, January 19, the 19th day of 2021. There are 346 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On January 19, 1981, the United States and Iran signed an accord paving the way for the release of 52 Americans held hostage for more than 14 months. On this date, in 1915, Germany carried out its first air raid on Britain during World War I as a pair of Zeppelins dropped bombs onto Great Yarmouth and King's Lynn in England. In 2005, the American Cancer Society reported that cancer had passed heart disease as the top killer of Americans age 85 and younger. In 2006, Osama bin Laden, in an audio tape that was his first in more than a year, said Al-Qaeda was preparing for attacks in the United States. At the same time, he offered a long-term truce without specifying the conditions. Today's birthdays. Country singer Dolly Parton is 75. TV chef Paula Deen is 74. Comedian Paul Rodriguez is 66. Comedian impressionist Frank Caliendo is 47. Source AP.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled "Fixing What's Broken Begins with Republican Party" by Megan McArdle, Washington Post Writers Group. These days, I am frequently reminded of an observation by a psychologist of my acquaintance that America seems like, quote, a hopeless marriage between people who have no recourse to divorce, unquote. Now, things are getting violent, and we're still locked in double harness, unable to work together, unable to leave. Watching Wednesday's impeachment proceedings in the House of Representatives, it struck me that neither left nor right seems to fully grasp our predicament. This really does remind me that the most dangerous period in an abusive marriage is when you leave, the New Yorker's Emily Nussbaum tweeted. And this seemed an eerily apt metaphor for President Donald Trump's behavior. But I get the sense that some on the left are taking the analogy too far, applying it to Trump's voters, not just the man himself. And of course, there's no way to leave them. I have not yet heard anyone on the left outline a credible vision for what happens after we impeach the president, and one hopes, convict him and bar our insurrectionist-in-chief from ever holding office again. I would like to know that there is one, and not just a fond hope that the backlash for January 6th will break the Republican Party once and for all. The Democrats have wasted the better part of two decades on deterministic assumptions that one day, demographic destiny or some other deus ex machina will do its work. Republicans will obligingly die off, and the woke will inherit the earth. Try assuming instead that they will be a political force to be reckoned with and negotiated with for the rest of everyone's life. But this is a reasonable and benign fantasy compared to the one Republicans indulged in on Wednesday. That if they were willing to condemn the Capitol insurrection as the work of a few bad apples, Democrats should admit their part in stoking our increasingly bitter divides, and we should all move on. It will only serve to further divide a nation that is calling out for healing, said Minority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican Louisiana, as the House took up impeachment. This was such an incredible suggestion that I did its offers the credit of assuming that none of them actually meant it. It was, I thought, the sort of, well, I had to try, didn't I, absurdity that politicians are sometimes forced to utter. But it quickly became clear that, no, there are people who seriously thought that this was not just a reasonable thing to ask, but a plausible one, after the events of last week. This was beyond a fantasy. To circle back to our earlier metaphor, Republicans who humored Trump's seditious lies as he made a serious run at overturning the results of a Democratic election need to understand that their party is the abusive spouse in this scenario. It doesn't matter what the other party did first. What matters is that a Republican president brought an angry mob to Washington, told it there was a crime happening on Capitol Hill, and then urged it to do something about it. If this family can ever be put back together, it will start with Republicans acting as though they understood this was almost unforgivable. Making up lies about a stolen election is wrong in itself. And when those lies end up with 5 people dead, everyone who helped spread them is responsible, particularly if they knew better, as everyone in Washington politics either did or should have. The cheapest and easiest way for Republicans to make the necessary atonement is to cut Trump loose completely. Vote to remove him from office and bar him from running again. Let the man who brought this down upon his country languish unlamented in electronic exile. This will make it clear to voters that they understand what a grave thing happened, and that they are determined not just to make amends, but to also ensure that nothing like this ever happens again. What's that, you say? Your base will punish you? It's not realistic to expect anyone to do something so politically costly. Well, yes, of course, it is going to be costly. Cheaper and easier is not the same as cheap and easy. But you cannot restore a broken relationship with perfunctory gestures and empty words. What's needed is a demonstration that you are willing to pay any price to fix what is broken and to undo as much as possible the damage you have done. If Republicans cannot do this, then the wounds that they allegedly want to heal will only deepen and fester, especially within their own party. They might purchase a little temporary peace by catering to the mob-friendly base, but doing so will drive off the moderates who want no part of what happened last Wednesday, and further empower a mob that has already terrorized their party into submission and would like to do the same to the rest of us. This column is called Guest View. It is entitled, Amid Mob Violence, MLK Called for Good People to Be Spiritual Anvils, from the Dallas Morning News. All across this great nation, school children watch, listen, and learn the Reverend Martin Luther King's historic I Have a Dream speech. A speech, along with Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and John F. Kennedy's first inaugural address, that rightly has a place in the pantheon of great American rhetoric. But on the third Monday in January, just 12 days after insurrectionists and white supremacists laid siege to the U.S. Capitol, we'd ask our readers to recall another of King's great speeches, a short address delivered 3 years before I Have a Dream, not to a sea of Americans gathered peaceably on the National Mall, but to a church full of civil rights activists under siege by an angry white mob. The date was May 21, 1961. The place, Reverend Ralph D. Abernathy's First Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. Abernathy, a major civil rights leader in his own right, had invited King to speak to a group of freedom riders and their supporters after they'd been violently attacked upon arrival in Montgomery. The freedom riders were young activists, both black and white, who'd been trained in nonviolent tactics and who set out from Washington, D.C. on May 4, 1961, on a journey through the Deep South on interstate buses to challenge the blatant non-enforcement of the Supreme Court's rulings that segregated buses were unconstitutional. King initially warned the Freedom Riders, including a young John Lewis, the late great Georgia congressman, that they were putting their lives at risk. His fears proved warranted as brutal attacks followed them through the South. The attacks were so vicious that it seemed the Freedom Rides would end. King flew back to Montgomery at Abernathy's behest and delivered these words to more than 1,500 supporters packed into the First Baptist Church, while a mob of more than 3,000 white people, many members of the Ku Klux Klan, trapped them inside, threatening to burn the church down. The federal government must not stand idly by while bloodthirsty mobs beat nonviolent students with impunity. It may be true that laws and federal action cannot change bad internal attitudes, but they can control the external effects of those internal attitudes. The law may not be able to make a man love me, but it can keep him from lynching me. We must now stand up, not for ourselves alone, but in order to carry our nation back to those great wells of democracy which were dug deep by the Founding Fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. So in the days ahead, let us not sink into the quicksands of violence. Rather, let us stand on the high ground of love and non-injury. Let us continue to be strong spiritual anvils that will wear out many a physical hammer. The next morning, the Alabama National Guard arrived, the siege ended, and the Freedom Rides continued. In all, 436 nonviolent activists participated in at least 60 separate Freedom Rides. Nearly all of them were arrested. Today, once more, if we are to carry our nation back to those great wells of democracy, we must again, as King urged Freedom Riders supporters in a church under siege 60 years ago, stand on the high ground of love and non-injury. This column is entitled, "McConnell is Still the Crucial Republican Leader," by Hugh Hewitt, special to the Washington Post. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, will remain majority leader until noon Wednesday with the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. At that moment, McConnell will then become the equal in influence of any minority leader in Senate history. No doubt, he is already planning how to wield that power for the GOP and the good of the country. Rule of law conservatives owe an enormous debt to McConnell for protecting the Constitution and its separation of powers, checks on administrative agencies, and robust individual rights, particularly those of free exercise of religion, speech, and property. In 2016, McConnell refused to be railroaded by the chattering class into consenting to President Obama's filling of the Supreme Court vacancy caused by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. Again, defying liberals' condemnation, McConnell joined with then-Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley, Republican Iowa, in 2018, and Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham, Republican South Carolina, in 2020, in guiding the Supreme Court nominations of Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett to confirmation. McConnell has also kept a laser focus on the appointment of appeals court judges, ensuring that the Constitution's protection of American freedom will be preserved for decades. McConnell is, as I have also written, the indispensable man to the GOP because of his canny, far-sighted understanding of both legislative and political processes. Under McConnell's tent, every Republican colleague will be heard and a course thrashed out. As any serious center-right conservative should, he keeps an ideologically diverse caucus together, valuing Senator Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Mitt Romney of Utah as much as he does any three among the most conservative senators. Over the coming month, in a Democratic-controlled Senate, McConnell will know when to yield the 60 votes necessary to the new president's program and when to rally the Republican caucus to oppose excess. With National Republican Senatorial Committee Chairman Rick Scott of Florida, McConnell will help recruit and equip candidates who can regain a GOP majority. Too often, media analysts have underestimated McConnell's ability to win elections, most recently in November. He will head his caucus in the minority for now. But this consummate master of the Senate can be expected to lead the institution again, perhaps in 2 years' time. Other Republican voices will also matter a great deal, of course. On national security, soon-to-be former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien will help steer the party as a whole. On domestic policy, Governors Ron DeSantis of Florida and Doug Ducey of Arizona are examples of successful Republican governors, both in crises and in times of growth. The House is full of GOP promise. The leadership team of Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California and Representatives Steve Scalise of Louisiana, Liz Cheney of Wyoming, and Tom Emmer of Minnesota will be poised to help Republicans retake the House in the 2022 midterms if redistricting follows its historical path of favoring the party that controls the most state legislative chambers, which the GOP does easily. The only thing that can deeply injure the Republicans is division, and the party's unity is essential in an increasingly unstable era at home and abroad. All periods of history are periods of transition, but some are more transitional than others, wrote Lord Robert Blake in his magisterial biography of Benjamin Disraeli. Blake was referring to the years of political upheaval in Britain between the two Reform Acts of 1832 and 1867. But he could have been describing the past few decades, the past several years in particular, when the world has undergone a period of transition more transitional than others. The era has seen the fall of the Soviet Union and the rise of the Chinese Communist Party with ambitions equal to any ever nursed by Vladimir Lenin. The technology revolution of the 1980s has led to big tech, or surveillance capitalism, as retired Harvard University Business School professor and author Shoshana Zuboff describes the increasing menace of Silicon Valley's unfettered and unregulated power. The rise of radical Islam remains a scourge. But now the world has witnessed Sunni Arab state reconciliation with Israel, with the potential to transform the Middle East. McConnell and reliable Senate Republican allies, such as Senators Tom Cotton of Arkansas, John Cornyn of Texas, and John Thune of South Dakota, will have to keep the caucus focused on real enemies of freedom, both foreign and domestic, and far away from the party's fever swamp conspiracists. Those who have admired McConnell and his masterly Senate GOP leadership while in the majority know where their trust must be placed now if they want the Republic of Freedom safeguarded for their grandchildren.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. Front page. Stop the spread, wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Vaccines begin later this week. OA News at OAOA.com. Some eager Odessa residents arrived at Ratliff Stadium early Monday morning, lining up to receive the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. The problem is the first shipment of the vaccine was scheduled to arrive sometime Monday, but actual vaccinations are not expected to begin until later this week, Medical Center Health System officials said this morning. MCHS will soon be releasing more information regarding when the vaccinations will begin, MCHS Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said. MCHS officials are asking residents to pre-register for the vaccine at https://secure.mchs.gov www.ECHD.org/QDREGVAX/default.aspx. The pre-registration link is not for setting up an appointment or a specific date and time to receive the vaccine, MCHS officials said. It is a pre-registration tool that will speed up the process of administering the vaccine. Community members that fall under the Phase 1B of the vaccination rollout are the first priority, but the pre-registration link is open to all. For those without internet access, MCH has created a COVID-19 vaccine hotline at 432-640-2220. That's 432-640-2220. The phone line will be answered Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The hospital is expected to receive its first weekly shipment of 3,900 doses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine on Monday and begin administering shots within days, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said last week. We are excited to be able to roll out these vaccinations to the community, Tippin said. We are asking for patience as we initially roll out this mass vaccine plan. We have been working for months with several entities, including the Odessa Incident Command, on developing an efficient rollout plan, but know we will inevitably face challenges along the way. Our goal is to get these out as quickly and smoothly as possible. Landgraf seeks Robin Hood Shield. OA News at OAOA.com. Austin. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, filed House Bill 1077 to reduce the impact of Robin Hood recapture payments on mineral wealthy school districts. The events of the last year demonstrate how necessary HB 1077 is for school districts in the oil patch, Landgraf said. Many Permian Basin school districts are still sending millions of dollars back to the state in recapture payments, even after the historic drop in oil demand. As the state's property values have risen significantly over the past decade, the state has also seen substantial growth in the number of school districts subject to recapture under Chapters 48 and 49, Texas Education Code. At the same time, oil and gas production has provided billions of dollars in tax revenue that has gone to help provide funding for education, roads, and the state's rainy day fund. School districts in energy-producing regions of Texas bear the brunt of the Robin Hood law, Landgraf continued. That's why I filed HB 1077 to give our school districts and students a chance to keep more of what we produce. HB 1077 seeks to provide relief to so-called mineral wealthy school districts by reducing the recapture payment amount required of these districts by an amount proportional to the percentage of the cost of the foundation school program funded by amounts paid to the state by school districts subject to recapture. Landgraf and the other members of the Texas Legislature convened at the Texas Capitol Building for the 87th Texas Legislative Session on January 12, 2021. Members of the Texas House and Texas Senate meet for a 140-day regular session beginning the second Tuesday in January every odd-numbered year to vote on legislation and pass a balanced state budget. Board to take up Ector contract renewal. OA News at OAOA.com. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will take up renewal of its contract with Ector College Prep Success Academy at its board meeting set for 6 p.m. today in the first floor boardroom of the administration building. ECISD is taking steps to protect against the spread of COVID-19 with staff and the community. Everyone is required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing building. Visitors are required to wear a face mask. The term of the performance agreement between ECISD and Ector College Prep Success Academy ends June 30th. The board may renew the contract for up to an additional 10-year term, supplemental agenda material said. In accordance with the law, the board shall renew a charter performance contract only if the board finds that the campus charter has substantially fulfilled its obligations and met the performance standards in the contract and applicable law, the material said. If the board decides not to renew a contract, the board shall notify the campus charter of the action in writing no later than the last Friday in January during the final year of the charter performance contract, it said. Senate Bill 1882, signed into effect by the Texas legislature in 2017, provides incentives for districts to contract to partner with an open enrollment charter school, institutions of higher education, nonprofits, or government entities, the Texas Education Agency website says. Ector was in its fifth year of improvement required under state accountability standards. If it didn't come off the list, it could have faced closure, or the Texas Education Commissioner could appoint a board of managers over the whole district. ECISD partnered with CEO/Superintendent Robert Bleich's Ector Success Academy Network as a way to stay sanctions from the Texas Education Agency for 2 years. On a separate item, the board will consider an election order and notice for the May 1st Board of Trustees election. Positions 2, 4, 5, and 7 are up for election, which will be conducted by the Ector County Elections Administration under the direction of Elizabeth Sartucci, Ector County Elections Administrator. Position 2 is held by President Delma Abalos. Position 4 is held by Trustee Chris Stanley. Position 5 is held by Secretary Steve Brown. And Position 7 is held by Trustee Nelson Minyard. Also at today's meeting, the district will conduct a public hearing to discuss the annual report that includes the Texas Academic Performance Reports, district accreditation status, campus performance objectives, information on violent or criminal incidents, and performance of the previous year's graduates in their first year of college, as reported by the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. The district also is requesting approval to receive the following donations greater than $10,000. $88,907.84 from Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, through the Education Foundation for Teacher Housing Incentive. Funds will be accounted for in Housing Fund 715. $50,000 from Education Foundation for a portion of grant writer salary. Funds will be received quarterly in the amount of $12,500 and will be accounted for in General Fund 199. Special presentations include a School Board Recognition Month proclamation, introduction of National Merit Scholar Program honorees, recognition of Advanced Placement Scholars, and International Baccalaureate graduates. On the net, tinyurl.com/y4zchfm.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.